Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is November 16th. Yeah, I know that. Today's 18th?
Nah. Yeah.
He was about to be like, I know that because
you said that shit with so much confidence.
I did.
Know that. I'm
scared to tell you why I'm saying that, but you know.
I hope you ain't missing somebody's birthday, Shawnee.
No. Because I got mixed up in the dates of the verses. I keep thinking it was the 17th, but it's the 19th.
It's the 19th, as is the 30th anniversary of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air on HBO Max.
Oh, the HBO Max is tomorrow?
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I saw some clips of it. I'm definitely going to watch that. I'm interested to see, Will does, you know, they do good television. So it's going to, I'm sure, it'll be funny and sentimental and it'll be, you know.
And Janet Huber.
And Janet Huber's on there. And, of course, I'm sure they'll do a Uncle Phil said James Avery segment. And, you know, it'll be tear-jerking. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to that, you know. It's funny, like, how... Not that the show wasn't obviously popular and stuff, you know, before, but I don't know. It just feels like to me, like social media has kind of like kicked it up a notch, like of people reminiscing about that show and how everybody's like Uncle Phil was like my dad, and you know, and obviously the clips of Will was like, why don't he want me, and then the Aunt Viv controversy. It feels like social media's kind of taken that and ramped it up. In the past few years.
It's done that with a few things from the 90s. Movies and TV shows, I think just, like you said, memes and people just circulating clips themselves. Mm-hmm. And I remember for a while there was a story going around that, or like a little meme going around that moment was so powerful because Will was estranged from his own dad, which is absolutely 100% not true. Yeah. But I think between GIFs and memes and stuff like that, like I saw something, people were talking about like fashion icons from sitcoms in the 90s. And somebody was like, Hillary Banks was that girl. And I was like, nobody ever was like, I want to dress like Hillary Banks. Ever.
I'll never remember that.
And somebody was like, but what about Lisa Turtle? I was like, nobody ever said they want to dress like Lisa Turtle either. Like none of these, to me,
the flyest kind of girl on in that world was Lisa Bonet.
Yeah,
she had a hippie downtown Seoul.
She was the only one who was in a show that actually dressed like a New York girl. Because like even the Living Single crew, like when I look back at this stuff now, like
it was basic.
Maxine shit was fly. Now, to me, I don't know if I liked it back then.
And it was interesting because they would try on the single, they would try to make Kim Fields. What's her character's name?
Regine.
Be the fly one. But if you look back, she was
just supposed to be the fly one then. But it was just
that's
like
what I'm saying. But she really kind of she was just very 90s.
Yeah, it was a very early
Bloomingdale's, Macy's.
Yeah,
Lauren Taylor, nigga.
Lauren Taylor. You know, it was, and shit was like very matchy.
Yeah,
you know, and like even live stuff, and that's the thing. Like the early '90s was cool. Like the hottest fashion shit in the early '90s was the Fly Girls, who were now on a sitcom.
Oh,
they were the ones who got it right. But not to go off on a tangent, but I was talking about this. And Dream Hampton jumped in and she was like, you know what it was? She was like, all those shows were taped in LA with LA costume designers who were doing
true, interpretation. It was no New York energy.
They thought New York, because I was like, none of these chicks dress like New York chicks to me. Not even the chicks who were from
But interestingly, the one that was taped in New York was the Cosby Show.
Right.
Which is why Lisa had that downtown boho energy. And even Malcolm, you know, not that he was a fashion dude, but you see he was kind of trying to do that New Jack Swing, Teddy Riley type of vibe with his shit once he got a little older, because they was around the city. You know what I mean? The other ones, like I said, was out in California.
Yeah.
But anyway, how y'all doing today?
I was just telling Nye, I'm like really happy. I think good. I found my groove with this whole stay-at-home mom.
And then I asked her why. When she said I'm happy, I asked her why. And I was like, that's a fucked up question for me to ask.
Why are you happy, nigga?
I'm like,
being happy.
Fuck you being happy.
Happy and I was like, why?
It feels like I've been at work, like at a job for 3 years and had no idea what I was doing until like 3 weeks ago.
And then it clicked.
It just clicked. Like my house is cleaner than it's ever been. My dog is really happy. We're getting new words all the time. She's right here telling me something's broken.
Thank you, Ivy.
Hey, Ivy.
Oh, it is broken.
Oh, shit, it is. I
feel good today. Thank you for asking.
How good, good, good. We're glad you feel good, Inca. We need you feeling good. We need everybody feeling good because the world is topsy-turvy like a motherfucker right now. Numbers is going up.
Listen, the numbers are going up. I'm trying to give 2020 a little bit of credit. It delivered us the election as kind of almost like a bit of restitution for the bullshit, right? But yeah, I'm concerned about the numbers growing and at the alarming rate at which they're growing, and at the fact that people don't seem to be paying attention to they're growing at all.
Interesting you said that. I had I was in a room on Clubhouse. Actually, the last couple of days, I've had to kind of search a little bit, but I found a couple of really interesting rooms. One was about...
I think I saw you poke in our room last night.
Yeah, I popped in there. You know me. I'll lurk. I won't... You know,
that was the first
come
time
to the
I
stage. I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm just listening. But I listened to a room yesterday, about the Republicans and, like, Black Republicans. And it was very interesting because they weren't on some, like, Trump is great shit. You know what I'm saying? They were kind of talking about it from... I was a Black Republican previous to this based on policies and this, my thoughts on how I feel government should work. And then we got blasted with Trump and we kind of got, you know, caught in this crossfire. But that's not what I wanted to go on. I was in another room talking about the numbers going up. And it was that woman, Karen Atella. You know her? You seen her on Instagram? Yeah. She's a writer. She was moderating the room, and we were talking. Everybody was kind of talking about that, how the numbers are going up, and how people don't seem to be as alarmed as they should be with these spikes in numbers, and with the infection spreading like wildfire. And saying how the government people felt like the government and the press isn't really as alarmist as they think people should be. And my theory to
it. My thing is Trump's bullshit is sucking up all the air. They can't be.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. No question. And I think part of his sucking up the air is because he doesn't want to focus on how terrible the numbers are, on the fact that he hasn't been to some meetings since fucking August and all that. But also, I really believe that, and again, this is my theory. I'm talking shit. I don't know. But I believe that the shutdown that we had a couple months ago, whatever, obviously really was damaging to the economy, right? And I feel like a lot of these corporations and stuff kind of went and was like, look, we know these numbers is fucked up, but we can't have another shutdown. So we got to kind of keep it going at the expense of some old people and some poor people and just some people in general.
Are you saying they went to the government and said that?
Yes, I believe they went to senators.
Yeah. Okay, it's the GOP. They went to the government and said that shit in March. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but now it's in effect.
But that's not even a secret. That's literally what the GOP, that literally was messaging is like, if you got to lose a few old folks or the
But I don't even think it's GOP. I think it's across the board now. I just think it's in general.
I disagree with that because the CDC is actually putting out daily updates, and literally every governor of every state is putting out daily updates.
That's true.
HHS. So like there's a COVID-19 update tag on. And for listeners, if y'all are hearing hissing in the background, I'm sorry. It's my radiator. It's steam heat. I tried to turn the valve off. It's nothing I can do about it. This is what happens in New York in the wintertime. But there's a COVID-19 tag on the Twitter, I guess the trending page. And if you look at that tag, you see like every governor is like, we had high records yesterday, high deaths, this many hospitalizations, this many positive tests, this many. And it's like, for 2 weeks, every state is having record highs. So the messaging is there. The communication is there. I don't think TV news is being as alarmist about it because they're too, because like I said, the election bullshit is taking up
and transition
all the air in the room. Exactly. But Biden is.
Oh yeah, Biden's on it. Like they
ready to, COVID team ready to go. But it's
ready to rock.
Yeah, but it's I mean, the vaccine news is getting a lot of traction, but I feel like what happened was, and this is my anecdotal, anthropological observation. I think in the beginning, it was something so new and scary that people were more inclined to take more precautions. But over the past several months, we've gotten used to this kind of functionality within having COVID. So it's like, I can basically, I think there are a lot of people who are like, they're living the same life they were, just with a mask on, right? Mm-hmm. And so now it's kind of like, I'm gonna do my normal shit. I'm just gonna
wear a mask
with the mask on. But like sometimes, you know what I'm saying? Because the other thing I'm finding is that even those of us who are very smart, like I think I might have said here that I thought I had contracted COVID at the polling mm-hmm. On election day. And the thing is, I had my mask on all day, but I did not have on gloves all day. I had them on at the beginning of the day and they got irritating and I took them off. And I was not being careful about where I was sitting, what I was touching,
mm-hmm.
what I was, you know,
washing your hands more regularly. Like people
were doing. Yeah, like I washed my hands, but I definitely wasn't like once every 30 minutes, once.
Yeah, like before, whereas, I needed to wash your hands nonstop.
Yeah, whereas in the beginning, I would have been like, I got to spray this down. I got to do. And I even find myself sometimes, I leave the house so infrequently, but every once in a while, I got to run back upstairs because I forget my mask. You know what I mean? Like, I just walk out the door and I'd be like, oh shit, I'm supposed to get a mask. So I think that it's been so long now that people have gotten a little bit lax and it's hard for them to go back on alert and alarm and like a full kind of let me retract from everything. But that's what's going to hurt us, especially going into the holidays.
Into the winter, yeah. Yeah, so, you know. As we always say, everybody be safe out there because shit is kind of crazy right now.
Getting real. Shit is getting real. Bring that Cardi clip back.
I want to give a quick RIP to Bruce Rudian, who is basically, I mean, all engineers look at him as, all recording engineers look at him as like, you know, Jordan. Like, he's like the best engineer of all the recording engineers. He recorded.
What makes a recording engineer exceptional?
I mean, you know, kind of just keep it real basic.
Like knowing the levels and knowing how to get.
Yes, it's just knowing how to, there's a science to, because there's a real science to sound that a lot of people don't know. It's like a math thing. Like it's a real science to the way to shape. You put, it's
like
kind of like
splitting what comes out of the left and what comes out of the right.
Yeah, and just shaping things. It's like the way to, the 808 is shape. It's almost like you can kind of, like I can tell the engineer like it needs more roundness and don't know what that means. It's a way to shape sounds. Okay. Or I could tell the engineer like it's not shiny enough. And it's like this kind of, you know, keywords that you know. So it's like there's real math to it, the kind of way music is put together. Music is math, you know, it's four, it's all math, and there's a way to put it together. And and then you can, the way you kind of place things together so that you can hear everything is kind of working. It's almost like a cake, like it's working together, but it's still clean enough where you can also kind of isolate each thing, and so it's not stepping on top of each other and sounding like mush, you know. Bruce, who is most famous for, he engineered basically all Quincy Jones stuff. And starting like in the 70s. And he did all three of the Michael Jackson albums. He did Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad. And just listening to those records, like, you know, some people like this song, some people like that. So that's a whole different conversation. But you just listen to those records, like they're so clean, but they're really kind of like loud, but they're still that bottom end, but you can kind of hear everything going on, which is why one of the reasons why those records have lasted now 30+ years. And you can play like Rock With You in the Club now. Yeah. It's a hit record. That's also why it's going to work. But all the hit records from 1982, don't work now if you play them now, but because he had a way to, there was a way he engineered those records where they just sound so. It's almost like they can kind of make you feel so good because of how they sound and come at you. That's why and that's the genius that most engineers kind of don't have.
So for the lay people who are listening who don't even though you just explained what makes an engineer good, if we're talking about what they actually do. So the producer actually puts the different elements of the sound together. But when you hear people talk about the difference between like a rough mix and a final mix, that's where we're talking about the engineer, the person who actually makes it sound, like you said, clean.
Well, and, yeah, because a lot of,
engineer and mixer are different, right?
At sometimes.
Okay.
So before like I'll give you a perfect example. That's what we talked about, the Midnight Marauders album, right?
Yeah.
So when Tip and them would record, a lot of times they would record with other engineers. There was a guy named Tim. Oh my God, I'm blanking on Tim's name. Sorry, Tim. But there was a guy named Tim, and there was a couple other engineers that would kind of record them.
Mm-hmm.
But then Bob Power would come in and mix the record. Now it's really kind of one guy doing both. And Bruce did both. Bruce would pretty much record and then mix the record as well. But there were times where there were two kind of separate people. The Philly International stuff, like Tom Moulton, he would come in, like they'd say, okay, Tom, fly in. Like, you know, we just cut a record with, you know, the OJs, fly in.
Then he'd
listen to like I Love Music. Be like, all right, cool. Everybody gets the fuck out the room. And then 3 days later, like, pow, you know what I'm saying? So, so sometimes it's different, but now it's because of cost and all that shit. And also, like, guys who really take it seriously, like, even, like, Puff. Like, Puff had a couple of engineers, like Prince Charles.
Puff's brother-in-law is one of his main go-to engineers.
Yeah, there's a couple guys that Puff used, and Maserati Tony. Like, these guys, all the mixes. Like, it's like, these guys are going to mix my shit because they know how it's supposed to sound and know what I need. And that uniformity is also very key because, like with Bruce and Quincy, they had a relationship. Bruce knew what Quincy wanted it to sound like without even Quincy saying anything at a certain point. It's like, oh, yeah, Bruce was a legend. And like I said, he was like the god of engineers, and he passed away. I think he was like 80 or so. Mm-hmm.
I saw a post about him, but I had not had a chance to look into who he was, but I saw somebody post, it was a picture of him at the boards. So I didn't even remember what the name was, but when you just said that, I was like, oh, that's who that was.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, and I won't dwell too long on this, but I think it's interesting when you just said that music is math. Like I play or used to play. So it's not that I didn't understand it on some level, but you know, when I was learning how to DJ at the beginning of right before shutdown, going into shutdown, which I need to pull my Serato back out. But when I was beginning to DJ, there were mixes that I wanted to do, and I could hear in my head, I could hear how I wanted the mix to go, but I was having such a problem with the blend. And the DJ that I was working with, like, had me look at the monitor, and he was like, it's the same thing you just said. He was like, it's just a matter of math. It's just a matter of numbers. And as soon as he said that, as soon as I started counting it, like the way I would count music if I'm playing, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is so fucking easy. Like, I could do it on the half count. I could do it on the full count. You know what I mean? Like, it's, mm-hmm. it just made the whole thing so much easier.
Yeah, which is why the DJs previous to Serato and all that were incredible, because they didn't have a monitor in front of them. They had to kind of just figure it out and just to know that this song is going to blend perfectly into this song, because they didn't have like the BPM standing right there saying, you know, whatever. But yeah, so that's one to mention.
You guys are giving liner notes so much color and context right now. Oh my God.
Yeah, thank you, Inga.
That's great. Thank
but
you.
But I just want to mention him because obviously he was another person that was, you know, part of our lives that most people didn't know his name. But you know, but when they play Baby Be Mine at the cookout, that's Bruce.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? When they play Rock With You, that's Bruce that made that shit sound like that.
Engineers are really unsung unless you're in the industry. Like, you never really, even though they win Grammys, they do all of that shit, you don't really hear those names.
Yeah. Unless you're like really, really in it, you know what I'm saying? But otherwise not. So let's get going. Let's start with I'll start with a TV show, but The Undoing.
So good.
So I've watched all. I'm caught up. This is four, right? It's episode four.
Yeah, four.
And I know now you were the one who suggested that we watch it on the show. So this the show's starring Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
And it's about this very rich Upper East Side, very New York couple. And always, like, they nail it down to the way they dress. Like, the, they go to these little black tie events. Like, it's like, that is that Upper East Side.
Like, honestly, the first episode, school. I loved the first episode before we even got into the plot. Because somebody told me it was slow starting. And I was like, I'm just loving remembering what New York was like when people were outside being outside. Extra for no reason. Like, this is the New York I know. Even though I wasn't a part of that New York, I know that New York and I miss that New York, you know?
It's interesting because I definitely was not part of that New York, but over the years being in the music business, like I went to some of those kind of
events.
Yeah, like we go to like I remember going to like an auction at this woman named Denise Rich. A lot of people would know, but she's this very rich, wealthy white woman who
I think people do know who to.
Yeah, well,
Rich intersected with one of these.
Yeah, with Puff and them. She was running around with them.
She used to be running around with Puff. I thought she was
a very rich white woman. She married this man named Mark Rich, and they were super wealthy, and she was very into music. And, you know, I don't know if she wanted to be a musician. I feel like she kind of did, but she was very involved in music charity and stuff like that. And I remember going to auction her crib, like on the Upper East Side, some banging shit. She's like, her crib kind of looked like the cribs on this, you know? So, I mean, so it's kind of interesting to see that world. Again, I'm nowhere near part of it, but kind of like put my little toe in it at different points with events and stuff. But the show is not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be kind of like this kind of like slow, you know, melodrama, almost like soap opera. But it is kind of soap opera in a way, but just kind of like a slow kind of, you know, Upper East Side, we're all rich and da 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 da. I mean, they are all rich, but like this, the plot line is this woman named Elena, her son, has a scholarship to the school, this very Tony Upper East Side school that Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant's child go to. And then Elena is just beautiful and
very young.
Very, very young, and ends up getting murdered. And then so the show is about a whodunit kind of thing. But it's got all these like twists and turns and like in episode 4, and it's kind of like every episode you're like, oh, okay, he did it. Oh, no, yeah. No, wait. She must have did that shit. Oh, wait. Maybe the son did it. Like, it's, you know, so it's kind of, it's really, really well written, and it keeps you on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Nicole does frazzled white woman so well. But also, I tweeted last week, Donald Sutherland
was born
to play rich white men. Like
rich mean white men.
Rich mean, but not even just rich, wealthy fucking white men. Like Donald Sutherland plays the best fucking wealthy mean white man. Like, cause you believe it. Like that nigga just be looking like a checkbook. Like he just looks like cash and he looks like disdain and he looks like all this shit in here is more expensive than your entire life. Don't touch it. Like he just.
And you don't even know really kind of how he made his money, but you know he got a lot of it.
And you know he's connected. Like he sits in a lot of dark paneled, you know, oak rooms with
a lot of boards. He's on a lot of that shit.
He plays that role so fucking well. And Hugh Grant plays the rapscallion so well. Like everybody is just really well cast, and it took me a half a second to realize it was Hugh because I was like, "Oh, Hugh, you've aged a little since your last project." Yeah, I can't remember even the last thing he did.
You look, he got the middle age, you know, a little weight on him now, and all that.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah.
But I love it, Anka. It's white people foolishness. I appreciate the distraction.
I think the parts of New York and the way that y'all love it is what made it move really slow for me because I don't care about any of that.
Okay,
I got you.
I was like, private school, all right, this is cute, but like can we get to the murder juice. Like what happened to the lady, why is she breastfeeding all weird in this meeting? Like what is this but yeah, it's, I mean, it's good. I'll keep it going.
You don't love it. It sounds like you don't love it.
Not enthralled.
Okay,
yeah.
Have you watched it at all, bro?
No.
Brett, don't even. I won't ask him to watch this. He'll be like,
I will say it was a little bit of a cheat code for David Kelly because he just came off of 2 seasons of this show, Big Little Lies, which was a similar concept on the West Coast. And Nicole Kidman was in that too. Okay. And she's basically playing the same character. It's basically like somebody called it an East Coast version of Big Little Lies. And it literally is that because it was the same thing. It was like this murder mystery wrapped up in a whole whatever thing. Except we knew who did it. It was just a matter of them keeping it all a secret.
Okay.
And but the same thing, like, you know, small, well-to-do neighborhood, posh, you know, mm-hmm. women, like all that type of shit. So yeah, it's been
Reese Witherspoon does that well too. Yeah, that Nicole Kidman does.
But what Reese Witherspoon does better than Nicole is that Reese does the mother who's fallen apart, but her public facade is flawless. And she does the waspy mom really well. Nicole be looking shook. Nicole be shook. Like, but they all do this brand of white woman really well. I actually appreciate it. It's a welcome distraction. And on a similar white people being messy note, I got into The Crown finally. Them fucking Windsors is messy as shit. You could not write.
This season is so good.
I just started, period. So I'm still on the first.
Oh my gosh. But
already, I'm just like.
Now, is The Crown, is it based on
Queen Elizabeth? Fact?
Is it based on true
yeah.
story?
Okay, yeah, so it's not,
yeah.
But the story
they
is
even so, used some real footage in there.
Oh wow!
You know, the story is so messy because it was Prince Albert, you know, ascends to the throne, abdicates the throne after a year because of Wallace Steve, whatever the fuck her name, Wallace Simpson, Wallace Stevens, the American divorcee.
Wallace Simpson from Boston.
Simpson, yeah.
Which was
because she was in Baltimore, right?
She was somewhere. But like high scandal because she was divorced, right? Mm-hmm. So then, you know, not Prince Albert, Prince David, who became
Edward.
Mm-hmm. King Edward. Albert was King George. So then, like, you got Albie becoming King George. But then you got, like, you know, Philip over here trying to figure out what the fuck his role is because Elizabeth is focused and doing whatever she's doing. But Elizabeth is, like, mad chill, mad cool, mad, like, doing all kinds of things all the time. The illest part for, like, and the Queen Mother, Queen Mary, is shady as fuck. I appreciate it. You know, what's his name? Winston Churchill, shady. Like, everybody, King Edward, shady. Everybody's just really fucking shady. And I love it. It's amazing. Like, it's
hold
so
on
amazing.
To your seat because it
it's a
really
lot of shit.
Yeah.
But it's so in season four, we're dealing with the whole Diana and Charles.
And
Diana
stuff.
Oh.
And I know a lot of people.
Which is.
It's going to get even worse. I know a lot of people.
They
like,
killed that lady, by the way. I still say that.
They definitely, well, I don't think they put a hit out on her, but I think it was their disdain for her that did it. And I really do think that kind of like how motherfuckers here are trying to kidnap Congress people type shit, right? I think the Queen's disdain for Diana was so felt by the press and the people that they felt like however they treated her, harassed her, harangued her was okay. And I really do feel like that's why Harry got Meghan the fuck out.
Oh, absolutely. But I believe they killed her because it was a similar thing in that allegedly, you know, I guess like I said, allegedly when Diana was killed, she was possibly pregnant by Dodi Fayed.
Right.
Who's Muslim.
Right.
And who owned, his father owned Harrods. And they were scared to have a Muslim bloodline connected to the two princes, and I believe that could be a similar thing with Harry. Obviously, Meghan is not all white, you know what I'm saying, biracial. So he's like, yo, okay, now this biracial child, even if, you know, it'd be very small drops of black, but regardless, who has a black grandmother will be connected to the throne. I got to get her out of here because people take that shit. People, whether you want to kind of own it or not, even in 2020, there's a sect of people who take that shit dead ass seriously.
Very seriously. And I think what's also very... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it was interesting to me that she was like 18.
She was very
when
young.
When all this happened.
Yeah.
Oh, Mary, she's 19. I never knew that before. I thought she was young,
but I didn't remember her being that young. Wow.
But she was married already. She definitely wasn't, I don't even think, 20 yet. But what I also found interesting was she might have been a little older. She might have been a little... Were you talking about Diana or are you talking about...
Diana with the...
When she got married. Yes, 19. Yes. But I found interesting, because I'm still on the first season, and, you know, listen, Queen Elizabeth is an old-ass white woman and she's a fucking monarch, which means that she definitely is not somebody to... you know, to champion in modern day, but I think her journey and her reign is admirable considering how young she was when she ascended to the throne, right? But that being said, she got a note from the queen mother, like, because she was out of the country when her father died. She gets a note from the queen mother, and I think this and I believe this part is true, and I think this informs, like, everything else that she does, because we don't really understand how monarchy works, not in real life. Like, we don't really understand how they think, how they move. But she got a note from the queen mother that was like, okay, you're now you have a duality. You, the Elizabeth that you were is dead. You are now Queen Elizabeth. That's a new person. You gotta let that person go. And regardless of how you feel, the crown comes first. And I think that that is the mindset that she's moved with. She was like, the crown comes first. The monarchy comes first. And like, one of the most powerful scenes I've seen so far is like when her grandmother walks up to her ass and fucking kneels at her. And I would have been like, grandma, get up off the floor. You know what I mean? But it's like, that's just so real, you know?
Yeah. I want to mention the MAGA March.
So a million MAGA March.
A million MAGA March. It ended up being about 4,600 motherfuckers that went to D.C. this week. And of course, tore up shit and caused chaos in the streets.
And blame fighting.
Exactly. And blame Antifa. And
they can't even protest, right? They were like having dinner on sidewalks in D.C. Like, that's not what this is.
They selling T-shirts and shit and flags. These clown-ass niggas. And then, of course, like when the fight started in the evening, because the fight started when the sun went down, which is not late now because the sun goes down at 3:30, but the cops are just letting people fight. They just let them get it in. Like, yeah, you know, go ahead, scrap it up until, you know, whereas we know when it was the George Floyd marches, if a motherfucker sneezed, they was getting shot with
tear gas and rubber bullets.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, it's just another stark contrast into how certain people are treated in the good old U.S. of A. So fuck all them Million Man March niggas. You know, me and MAGA March niggas. We got six of them.
Y'all still lost, motherfuckers.
Yeah, they still lost. And they don't want to let it go.
Trump is like, all these people are out here for me. If only they had voted. They didn't vote.
And his punk ass drove through the march on his way to play golf.
Dumbass.
It's like, dude, he didn't even stop for y'all. He like, gave you the deuces. And went to his golf course while y'all out here marching for him.
Hi, Lil Travis. Hi, Ivy. Travis, no, he spit that girl out.
Don't make no sense. I ain't nowhere in there.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, and also like, Trump done lost how many times now? It's like, people keep congratulating Biden every day because he's embarrassing himself so badly. Most recently with Michigan. Michigan was legit trying to certified the entire state except Wayne County, which is the county that Detroit is
in. Mm-hmm.
Which make that make sense. Because there was a discrepancy, I think, of literally like two ballots, if I'm not mistaken. And the two Republicans who are on the voting commission or ballot counting commission or whatever for Wayne County were, I guess, a little too vocal about it, started getting pushed back, realized that they had to go ahead and certify the whole state.
So last night,
Trump's all happy, like, yes, they refused to certify Michigan and blah, 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 blah. And literally right after that, the AG is like, right, so we're certifying Michigan.
Yeah, because it's ridiculous.
It's all stupid. So I think there's like one third of one lawsuit out of the 30-something that his campaign filed that's actually still active in PA, but they're moving to dismiss the whole thing.
Bro, you want to talk about the student loans thing? Because you said you didn't want to mention that.
I just figured we would toss it in. I didn't necessarily have a particular angle. I have an opinion, but you know,
not tell your opinion, bro. Go ahead, say your opinion, bro.
I mean, I just
give a little backstory to it too.
So basically, the idea is that the Biden-Harris campaign has expressed the desire to want to eliminate some level of student loans. I've seen reports I haven't verified as all of your debt versus most reputable places have said $50,000 of your debt, which is a substantial amount of money.
That's a lot of fucking money.
And people are fascinatingly to me are up in arms.
Yeah,
with the mere idea that someone would be bestowed this blessing after they've spent money to climb out of student loan debt.
It's not just that though. So there's three opposing sides that I've seen. The first one is the, you racked up this debt, why does my tax money have to pay for it? That standard whatever, which we know is like, you ain't gonna miss them $2-3 that extra.
Exactly.
I get that. The second one is coming from self-identified progressives and actual progressives, which is interesting because this was something that was on Bernie's platform at one point, and then he moved away from it. Their thing is, which is some white shit, that it further disconnects the Democratic Party from the working class, because, you know, for progressives, working class means white people. That it further disconnects the Democratic Party from the working class because it only benefits like upper class or like a privileged elite sector of people, which is a fallacy. And then
so that means if you go to college, you're elite and upper class.
Apparently. Also, I really need everybody to decide what they think working class means, because nowhere in any of these people's definitions do black people seem to fall who won by the election and who are a large part of the working class. Main point. But anyway, and then there are the black people who are opposed to it, who I feel like aren't really arguing this in good faith, are just talking shit. Although some of the younger ones, I think what we miss is that what starts out as maybe divisive or even like concocted talking points that are meant to cause derision and sow discord, there's a group of people who pick up on them and genuinely adopt them, right? So there's a new subset of ADOS that's called B. They call themselves B1, meaning Black First. And, you know, like you'll see in their bios, they'll be like, I'm not a POC, I'm not a minority, no anti-Black racism, blah, 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 blah. And their argument...
B1? I haven't even heard of these things.
B1. Their argument with this, as with most of the Biden-Harris plan for Black America, which Biden and Harris do have a plan for Black America, is that it's not just for Black people, that it also benefits other people at the same time. So they're trying to argue that it would widen the wealth gap, because even as it's dismissing the loans for Black people, it's also dismissing for white people, which is stupid. And this is why that's stupid and wrong.
So wait, so what they think, that the loan should just, Black people should the only ones to be forgiven?
Yes, actually, yes.
I don't want to talk about these niggas. These niggas is dumb. No, I don't want to talk about these niggas.
But for people who don't know.
These niggas is dumb.
No, but Jeff, aside from that, for people who don't know, let me explain to you why this is crucial for Black people. And we've kind of talked about this before. Sean went into it when Robert Smith was forgiving the debt of the Morehouse class. Aside from straight up reparations, student loan debt forgiveness is like the like quickest path to financial freedom,
yeah,
for the Black community that you can do, right? Because Black students borrow more than any other ethnic group, racial or ethnic group in college. And they also tend to borrow at higher amounts, right? They drop out more because they don't have the financial resources. They don't have the support. They're first generation. They don't have the, well, navigate. So what people are missing in these student loan conversations are the people who didn't graduate and have the debt without the benefit mm-hmm. of the degree, right? Black students also make up almost 20% of the for-profit college population, while only 13% of the public college population. For-profit universities, their whole recruitment technique is to force you or to push you to borrow. At for-profit, like a DeVry, like a University of Phoenix or whatever, the dropout rate for borrowers is 65%. The default rate is 1/3 of the students, right? So that's all this debt you're saddled with. And Black students come out with more debt. And like, it starts at about like 7-8 grand within like 3 to 5 years. There's a 25K disparity between them and their white counterparts. If you go to grad school, it's double the amount of loan as their counterparts. So the over-indexing is the reason why this would impact Black students more, because people are like, only, you know, Black students are only 20% of student loan debt. And it's like, yeah, but Black students might be 20% of student loan debt, but they're only 12% of their entire university population. And even if they're 20%, so like they over index, and it's not just the students, it's the parents with those parent plus loans or whatever the fuck it is, most of the parents who borrow off of that are low income, right? So it's a cycle. So we have
I understand all of that. I took out loans.
I'm just explaining it to listeners.
No, I got you. But I'm saying, but how do these niggas? How do these B1s or whatever the fuck they are think that Biden Harris or any administration would do a program that only black people could access to as far as
that's the thing. They know
that's retarded.
They know it's never going to happen, but that gives them infinite reason to complain because it's never going to happen. I think they actually want it to never happen so that they can keep complaining.
Yeah, but frankly. So, but about the student. So, I think this is a good thing. If it's able to be pushed through.
It would create room for buying homes.
A lot of shit.
It would create room for savings. It would mean that you're not in a cycle where your kid has to do the borrowing all over again.
So how does this work? Does that mean that the government picks up the loan
yet.
That
we don't know. There's not a plan yet.
Okay.
There's not a plan in place yet. It's just he rolled out some of his economic plans and priorities on Monday or Tuesday, and announced some of the people that he was putting in position. And this is part of his economic plan and part of his, and it was part of their like plan for Black America under trying to like bridge the gap in education disparity.
I think that's on the Ice Cube's platinum plan. That nigga been quiet as a church mouse.
He been quiet. Somebody said he tried to just go back to posting Friday meme like no
nigga. nigga putting Debo up on fucking Twitter now. nigga, we ain't forget. I ain't forget that. I don't know if y'all got a chance to look, but I had sent the article, but it was right before we taped about the MTA in New York. They're saying that they need $12 billion from the government, from the U.S. government, in order to stay afloat. And now,
like, where does all? I just really
a need lot of this is also get, posturing, but the thing
I need is, them to be audited because like they waste more fucking money,
so much money, and of course they're doing this because there's a new administration coming in. This is these are all my opinions, but just kind of watching the way things work. They're doing this because there's a new administration coming in, and they feel like they could kind of, get them, for a bunch of bread. And they know that what they're proposing here, if it was indeed to happen in New York City, which is the financial capital of, well, I don't know if it's the financial capital of the world anymore, but it's obviously a very important city. If they do what they're proposing to do, if they don't get this money, it's going to be catastrophe. Did you get to read that article, bro, about the MTA?
Yeah, I breezed through it.
What do you think?
I think the MTA says this every 7 to 10 years. I mean, we've this is not an uncommon thing with the MTA. You can go back and just do a quick Google search and you'll see the same sentiment and articles from 2010, from 2009, from 2008. There's a consistent excuse as to why service is down and why repairs are not being done. But we know that there's money there. We know people who work for MTA. They do quite well.
Great pensions.
That is a solid train, no pun intended, but that's a solid train to middle class for real.
Yeah.
So we've seen this before. MTA has this very sort of weird they have a weird way of operating, right? Which is that it is really the heart of the city, but it is a state sort of sanctioned service.
It's so weird to me that it's a state joint.
Yeah, and so because of that, there's just a weird thing with the funding. Even when you look at some of these salaries, when you look at some of the expenses, when you do get a chance to see it, but there's not a clean P&L sheet, right?
Never.
There's no way for you to sort of review where you can and can't cut. It's also, and let me just say too, it's also a very dangerous job. I don't think people understand, because it's a physical job. And I mean, it's dangerous outside of the sort of normal New York City danger shit that kind of comes with that. But there's also, like, you know, you're on the fucking tracks, man. Like, those are real, you know what I mean? Those are live tracks. Those
yeah, real fall. Real voltage.
Yeah, people get hurt. You know, we have a lot of outdoor elevated lines. There's a lot of shit with the MTA. There's a lot of moving parts. Those
tunnels.
And for a lot of that, there is a ton of money that has not gone into infrastructure. And so that's why we see the flooding. That's mm-hmm. why we see the dilapidated stations. It is interesting because it's very clear where those stations that are not being tended to are. We know where they are. Right. Because we know when we happen to jump off the train at 72nd Street. OK, it definitely don't look like fucking Utica Avenue in Brooklyn. I promise you that. Right. You know what I'm saying? So we know what the hubs are and all of that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, the MTA does this constantly. This is them crying wolf again. They will get some level of that money. Yeah. They will continue to scrape off the top. It's like fucking casino. They're going in and they're skimming off the top, and they got all these fucking expenses, and they're paying these exorbitant salaries to executives that can't seem to get anything done right. In addition to those people, I'm 100% positive they are paying tens of millions of dollars to consultants to tell the people who they're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to what right. they should be doing.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, it's just inefficient. It's a round robin.
And then they do it, like, this is how I know the MTA is wasting money. So the 168th Street train station by me, they went through 2 years of restoring the station. So, like, for 2 years, it was limited service or no service, all kinds of scaffolding up. They were literally, like, cleaning the tile, putting shit back, restoring original fixtures. This was, like, 2 years. It might have been longer. As soon as they finished that, they decided to replace the elevators and close the station altogether for a year. Why does it take a year to replace two elevators?
They just get the elevators here. It took a year.
Why is it a year? Like, what? Who are you contracting out to that it takes a year to replace? Like, wait till the parts are in. Fucking replace the elevator. That shit should be a couple months tops. A year? A year?
I've always thought that it just seems weird to me that that's even something you would contract to, right? Like, because there is a justifiable, for me, there are more than enough stations that have elevators that could easily justify you having an elevator department.
Yeah.
That's all these things do. Go around, fix the elevators.
Yeah. Exactly.
Instead of waiting until they
break all the way down and being like, we're going to shut the whole station down for a year.
Because prior to this, prior to those elevators, what you had to depend on was if you were handicapped, if you were in a wheelchair, you either A, didn't get onto the train, or you were at the mercy of people willing to help you.
Help you up.
You had strollers. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was on the commuters to help people.
Yeah, to help somebody carry the shit down the stairs. Exactly. So what they're proposing is a 40% cut in weekday subway service and layoffs of more than 9,000 transit workers. And what they have in their back pocket as the ace card is COVID, because they're saying that COVID has driven ridership down so low that they're not making the money that they had on the books that they would make in a normal year or two of service.
And these niggas was about to raise the
they're gonna raise it a whole dollar from $2.75 to $3.75. Like not even like a quarter, like it's gonna jump a whole dollar. Usually
they raise a quarter at a time. And I can't, but here's the thing. Honestly, COVID might low key have saved the MTA because the infrastructure could not handle how much the ridership had grown, right?
Yeah. So
they have a larger ridership than they had ever had. But services were more delayed. They were having more breakdowns. And then even though you had a larger ridership, you were still about to increase our fare by a whole dollar. So now you have a lower ridership, but you've had time to repair cars. You've had time to clean cars. You've had time to clean stations. Like, I don't think that... And also, we've had like a large amount of exodus from New York. We have a lot of people who are not going to be that quick to get back on the train, even though I know they keep saying it's the cleanest way to ride because they keep cleaning it and because you have to have your mask on the train. But I don't think it's going to cripple New York the way they think it's going.
Well, what they're saying is, and again, this is a spin, but there's probably some truth to it. What they're saying is if they cut it down 40%, which is insane, right? Which cut
40% down is so, very, so, there'll be, very so
it'll be some lines that'll run so sparingly that when they say people go back to work and it's cut down 40%, like, you know, with certain lines, most lines, but certain lines, like the trains come pretty quick. Boom. Oh, I missed one, but there's, you know, 2 minutes, another one's coming. 3 minutes. But if they cut them down, now if I miss one, now one's not coming for 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
Right.
Which means that when I get on that one, that next one, it's packed because there's not a lot of trains, which will increase your chances. Everybody's
but it also assumes COVID that.
Because the trains are, everybody's crowded up on the trains together. So they're holding that like, yo, you don't want us to cut the shit down because, you know, COVID will run rampant when everybody's jammed up on each other because right. There's not enough trains.
And it's like, I get what they're saying, but I still think they're oversimplifying because, like, for example, from some of the, from the boroughs, from like Queens and the Bronx, yeah, that's probably true. Within Manhattan, most of the people I know who work in the city, unless they're essential workers, they're not going back into an office before next summer at the earliest.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I know that's just a very New York centric story, but I
just found it. You just put on a whole fur.
Yeah, Inga just put on a chinchilla coat.
It's like 15 degrees outside.
It's cold outside.
It's we got a little bit of snow yesterday.
Bro, were you been following the James Harden thing?
Not really. You know, I know that he turned down the $103 million for yeah, it would have been years.
$50 million a year.
Yeah, but I mean when they said,
he's made $500 million over his career.
Even aside from that, they're saying it like the money disappears because he turned down the 103. Like he's going to get the one. Okay, so maybe he doesn't get 103. He gets 97. Like, I mean, what do you fucking do, right? Exactly. Like, I mean, like at those numbers, we're, you know, that's a negligible dollar amount, right? Yeah. Like to go where you want to go. He clearly doesn't want to be in Houston anymore.
He didn't want to be in Houston. He wants to come to the Nets and play with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, kind of do their version of a big three.
A fucking disaster.
Yeah, that's a shit show because all three of them need to keep the ball.
Nigga, if there's anybody that would want to have cameras around, oh, that would be must-see TV.
Yeah, let's document the Nets season.
That will be a shit show by All-Star break. Promise you.
I just found I agree with you. I just found the story interesting because it came out that he the main reason he wanted to it could be spin because everybody spins, but he's saying the main reason he wants to leave Houston is because of the owner. Because the owner came out and is a huge Trump supporter, and James is saying that he can't deal with the owner who's just that much, you know, of a Trump supporter. And the owner said something about how he would kind of, do you remember, bro, something about that he would do something with the finances or something if he had to?
He probably did. I don't remember exactly, but the owner of the Houston Rockets has been taking, he's taken a very hard hit because his money is in entertainment and lodging, right? Like he owns hotels and restaurants and shit like that. So he's taken a major hit. So yeah, he probably did say something. I think James Harden is full of shit. I think he's saying that to buy back a piece of credibility after he wore that Blue Lives Matter mask when he went into the bubble. I think he got a lot of flack for that. I think he's trying to, you know, kind of
clean up his image.
Yeah, and Trump is low hanging fruit. To be quite honest, like, my nigga, if doing business with people who support Trump is your bar, then you might as well go work somewhere else, bro.
Yeah,
like you might as well pack it up.
Yeah, and if you're a $500 million dude, at which he is, he's around a lot of Trump supporters. Like
my man, you think the guy, you know, just because the guy who owns the Nets isn't necessarily waving a Trump, you know, banner or has a Trump sticker on his car, doesn't mean that he's not supportive of his policies and his procedures, right? Like, I'm just saying, like, it's Trump using Trump as your leverage.
Yeah,
it's just such a weak and lame argument, right? Because there's so many other reasons for you to wanna, you know, maybe you wanna just leave because you fucking want to. Like, not everyone wants to, you know, be in one place at one time. You know, he's a single man. He doesn't have a family, for, far as I know.
Yeah, I don't
you
know, think
he,
so.
He's not a dude that's established in the community with wife and kids, on the board at the hospital. Yeah. She running around kissing babies and handing out turkeys and shit. This nigga, and he in the strip club. That's James' contribution. His contribution to the economy is I'm finna go drop $10,000 a night,
and put Bambi through college.
Now, little Davion, he could get his Kung Fu Grip G.I. Joe, nigga, and his PS5.
And his new Jordans.
That's my contribution.
And his new Jordans.
The rent's paid, nigga, the heat is on.
Exactly. Y'all good. You got the Camry paid off. Y'all good. Yeah. Also, Inca, did any of y'all watch Real Housewives of Salt Lake?
You know, my girl did. I didn't watch it. Like, I forgot it was premiering, but I want to watch it. I want to see what the Mormons are. I heard it's a lot.
It's so interesting.
It's so not what I thought it was going to be.
No,
I thought
Mormons it was going to be so corny. Mormons are fascinating. First surprising. Of all, they're obsessed with perfectionism. Because, you know, the whole mommy blogger culture and DIY culture, all of that shit started with Mormon wives. And, like, they're all, like, super blonde, and they got to be thin. Also, Utah is, like, one of the plastic surgery capitals of the whole U.S.
You can tell.
Like, the whole shit is fascinating to me. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, so.
The cast definitely lets you know that is where plastic surgery lives.
Absolutely. and they not shamed. So all these women, I don't understand how the football coach, how they have seemingly as much paper as some of the other ones. Because, I mean, a football coach, he's the coach for the University of Utah. So it's a good living. As Brush says, ain't missing no meals. But, like, maybe I don't even... He's not the head coach. He's like,
but all Mormon wives also usually... Do they have a stay-at-home business? Because they're all supposed to have a stay-at-home. Not supposed,
that couple is not Mormon.
Yeah, they're not Mormon. Muslim. He's Muslim.
What? And he lives in Salt Lake.
There's a Pentecostal couple, a Muslim couple, two or three Mormons, and one that's been
excommunicated. Yeah. So the Muslim, again, he didn't grow up in Utah. He's a black dude. He went to college there and stayed, and now he's a coach on the team. And again, he's not the head coach. He's like an offensive coordinator, something like that. And then his wife is Hawaiian, and
Kate. She's Tonga.
Tonga, came there to go to college, and they met, and when she came there, she transferred into Mormonism, and then she was, you know, rocking hard, Mormon, and then her husband, she said that she stepped to her husband and wanted him to convert to Mormonism, and he was like, fuck out of here, like, they didn't even let black people into the church to the 70s, and she didn't know that. She was like, what?
Which is a very fair and valid argument.
So he started breaking down to her.
I don't understand why black people live in Salt Lake City at all.
He started breaking down to her the history of Mormonism and how they treated black, basically all minorities. And she was like, oh, shit, I didn't know. And so she converted to Islam. And they're not like on a show like Aslam Alaikum. It's not that, but they are Muslim. Then there's another woman. I don't remember the name. So, Inka, if you remember the name, please.
Wait, the black girl married her grandmother's husband?
Yeah.
It was in her grandmother's will that after she died, the husband married, quote unquote, one of her girls.
Girls, yes.
Wow.
Yes. Could have been a daughter, been a granddaughter, whoever.
Yeah, anybody. So he's technically a step grandfather because he's pretty young.
But it's still really.
It was her grandmother's third husband.
Yeah, yeah. So I read a little bit on that church. It's a Pentecostal church out in the middle of Salt Lake, which is bonkers. It's super. I'm assuming it's going to probably come out during the season, but it's mad controversy around that church. Period. Like, the grandmother was apparently real shady with the bread. And the reason that she wanted them to get her to marry one of them is to keep the money in the family and to keep the church
in the family.
Yeah. So the money
is long.
Long as fuck. And they married like they fucking like they married. It ain't like we just did it because of. Yeah, they ain't like they just did it. But apparently, this woman, her name is Mary. She's shady as the black lady. She's shady as fuck. Like on the show, she was like, I was like,
she says anything.
Anything. anything. Yeah. She's like, she's one of them, like, I just say what I got to say. It's like, no, you're a fucking asshole.
Yeah, she's one of those people that can wear the nicest of everything, but still looks absolutely crazy.
Tacky.
Like, she had on a Valentino dress that, mm-hmm. I've seen that dress before, like, on runway and, you know, whatever, in catalogs. It's a gorgeous dress, but she had it on with white stockings. She had a visible black bra showing. The dress was, like, mint green, lacy, with, like, a really interesting neckline. And she was like, nah, I'm gonna put this black bra on and all of this jewelry and a Gucci belt and white stockings because I'm a pastor's wife.
Yeah, because
she's one of those people. It's not good.
Yeah, because like she's like, yeah, because she, you know, I've read like there's a lot of issues because she has, there's a lot of issues obviously with also within that family because her brothers and sisters and her cousins and them, like they now have to go to her for money. And she's like be holding the money on her. But meanwhile, like I said, she's buying, you know, Balenciaga this and, you know, Chanel that and Celine this. And they have to come to her and be, yo, I need some money for, you know, whatever. She'd be like, nah, fuck out of here. But, you know, she got on, like I said, a $30,000 Rolex or whatever. So she's crazy. And then there's another woman who was married to the guy who was kind of like the guy's ancestor was kind of like a sergeant of arms to like the guy who started the church or something like that. Like basically his family was billionaires.
What's his name? Joseph Smith? Like the original dude.
Yeah.
Oh, he's actually so related to Joseph Smith.
He was the body man for Joseph Smith.
Oh, okay.
And she actually like slipped up and said that like for all intents and purposes like he would kill people.
Yeah. Yeah. So
like that, they're still so wealthy.
Yeah, so they guess like he's a, like that family is a literally they're billionaires.
It's so surprising that like every part of the show I was like, what the hell is this? Like, I have to watch this.
And they got divorced, but she, you know, she bounced back because she opened up these tanning salons and she says she does 20 million a year in business. Because I guess all the people from the Mormon community come to her. Yeah. But, I don't want to get the whole Botox thing. Because like I said, it's a huge out there. So, but it's just really not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like these drab, corny ladies. But there's so much scandal. And just the first episode, it was like, what? Mm-hmm. So please, if you haven't watched Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, watch it. It looks like it's going to be a wild ride. And Andy and them, you know, they're smart. They know that, you know, how Atlanta's petering out. You know, they need new. New York is spicy. Petering out. Yeah, Beverly Hills. They
Potomac is unbearable at this point. Yeah,
exactly. So they needed a new franchise.
But it's going to be interesting because
we haven't seen. You know, we haven't seen.
But they've tried that before. And, you know, they tried DC. DC only lasted one season. They tried Texas, I think.
They tried Miami, too, right? Two seasons?
Maybe?
Yeah, they tried Miami. That was with Lars of Pippen. But this one is some other shit. So, yeah, so definitely check that out. I wanted to mention, I found this is kind of interesting. So Meg Thee Stallion's album is coming out tomorrow night, you know, technically Friday. And there was a little controversy yesterday because she declined to do the Breakfast Club. And Charlamagne and them jumped on the Twitters and was like, oh, she's disrespecting black media because she had done an article with an interview with GQ. And I guess they mentioned a little bit about the, I haven't read the article yet, but they mentioned a little bit about the Tory thing and, you know, obviously a bunch of other stuff. And so Charlamagne and them were pissed off that she wouldn't come kind of basically, I'm going to say kind of like kiss the ring and do the Breakfast Club. But Megan's stance is
Did she say that she wouldn't come? Because everything
she said she ain't coming.
Says that she wouldn't come if they asked Tory Lanez questions, but she was for the interview.
Exactly. But the Breakfast Club was basically like, yo, you got, if you come, we get to ask whatever we want. Now, legally, she probably can't answer a lot of those questions because it's still an ongoing case.
Right.
And also, I just feel like, you know, we've seen over the years, I mean, we talked about it on the show several times, bro, about how Charmaine and go at certain women. We talked about the Lil Mama thing. You know, how
still bothers me.
Yeah, it bothers me too. It really bothers me. I mean, it bothers me in general, but it also bothers me because, like, I, you know, back then I knew her because she was on Jive. Like, so it was like a little personal to me. Like, I'm like, yo, like, and this woman's crying. She's crying, and Charmaine's still going. Still digging. And we've seen that, like, kind of over the years, how he, the Janet Mock thing. Like, there's been all kind of incidents where, like, they...
Monique.
Monique. Exactly. There's been several incidents where women come on that show and they just go at them, you know, to the point. So I wasn't really mad at Meg for, like, I'm not going to subject myself to your fuckery for your ratings and your clicks and likes.
And that seemed
to be the sentiment on, you know, social media. So, but it seemed to be the sentiment on social media. People were kind of backing Meg.
Yeah, I mean, I think what people forget is that here's the thing. You have a right to obviously do what you feel is objective journalism, but let's not fool ourselves. Angela Yee is the only thing close to an actual radio journalist out of those three. The other two are just personalities, but you can do what you feel like is an objective interview, but you also have to remember that artists have the right to decline coming to your outlet, coming on your show, granting you the whatever. Megan is not a new upcoming artist. She don't need the look. She actually does not need the look at all. You know what I mean? And it's like, and Megan has realized, I peeped this when she did her Saturday Night Live performance. Megan has realized how her experience with Tori is coinciding with a movement for agency transparency and accountability that we're going through right now. And like, she's going to use that, right? So that means saying no to things that don't suit her. And I have to imagine, like, I would absolutely, why? I wouldn't want to sit across from Charlamagne in an interview for shit. Like, I just would not. Like, why would I do that? And definitely not envy. Like, why would I want to? Because Yee sometimes tries to toe the balance, but she doesn't do it well. Yeah. So it's like,
Yee will do, she'll try to say something, but then eventually she'll just get quiet. And then Charlamagne and them are going, and she's just not saying anything, which is why another woman, Kay Michelle, she was like, yo, like, you ain't hold me down up here when these niggas was going at me. Like, so, like, again, this is, I'm not mad for this, you know. What do you think?
I think that, okay, we've all worked in entertainment, right? And one of the things that we also know is that it is your job as a manager, as a handler of an act, to make sure that you're putting them in the best positions possible. There is no gain from her going to that show.
Right.
There is no, there's
going
no benefit.
Viral for the wrong shit.
There's no benefit to putting her in that space. She doesn't gain anything. You've put her in harm's way. You've changed the conversation from it being about her music to it being about this interview and how Charlamagne did this. And that, and that's what's going on and transpiring. So yes, for her people to turn that down, it was smart of them. And two, I want to just say too, man, like, trying to guilt her. Listen, Black media does get ignored. I've been on tons of red carpets. Black media is usually grouped together and at the end of the carpet, they are usually bypassed. I've watched PR people consistently do this. I've seen Black people have to tell their PR people, stop doing this. I'm going to talk to the Black people right now.
Yeah. We saw that clip of Halle Berry when she was like, chill, chill, chill. My people's over here.
And so while that is a real thing, the Breakfast Club does not suffer from that. And for them to try and guilt Meg and trying to make this into the Black arm that has held you down before anybody made you a household name, like, nigga, eat a dick. You niggas are fucking awful up there. You are awful to people on a regular basis. It is not beneficial for them to come up there. You don't move the needle the way you think you do. You move the needle for you. You move the needle for revolt. But you don't move the needle for people that come up there and do those interviews. Right.
Not at
that's
all.
That's what I've been saying for years. And you go to the Breakfast Club, they're getting all the benefit of that. Because if it is some type of controversy to the interview, it goes to their clicks and likes, not to yours.
And even if it's just clicks and likes, nigga, it's not improving your standing. Yeah. Going to the Breakfast Club does not mean that your opening week of your movie goes from fucking $12 million to $20 million because you did the Breakfast Club. True. There's no fucking benefit to going up there.
Shit for the culture.
Honestly, all
and for your promo person's relationships, that's really what it is.
I was just getting ready to say, no one that listens to The Breakfast Club is being introduced to Meg.
True.
Meg is absolutely in deep in the culture that True. Would be listening to and understanding what's happening at The Breakfast Club. There is no benefit. And furthermore, GQ is a fucking magazine. Do you know how long it takes for a print magazine? They had to have done that interview at least 60 days ago, nigga.
Yeah, I was going to say 2 months. Yeah, at least two months. Yeah.
Because when magazines were flourishing, I remember they would come around 90 days out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I know now there's a different level of turnover, you know, how these
things are presented. But you're right. You still have to turn that story in well before print run.
Yeah. And again, this is, I would want all of you young managers and all of you young entertainment folks to take heed on this particular instance. You have to weigh out what is a benefit for your artists. And sometimes you are putting them in harm's way, and I don't mean that in a physical sense, like they weren't going to harm her, but her mental state is wildly important. Her emotional state is wildly important, and it is greater than whatever you think relationship you're going to have with The Breakfast Club. Because guess what? If you got another hot artist, you're going to get them up there too.
Yep.
Okay? Yep. And if you got a bum nigga, they not fucking with him. No matter who you brought up there, nigga, you could have brought Janet Jackson up there, okay? And if the nigga ain't moving the needle, he's not coming to The Breakfast Club.
Nope.
So all that relationship shit, that shit's overblown, dude.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. And, you know, we've seen several instances, men and women, who have, like, you know, basically blown a gasket or, you know, been emotionally distressed by being, you know, literally while they're on the show. We saw Fred Joe Starr was about to really knock this nigga out for real. We saw Master
that's
P
his thing.
Yes, we saw Master P being like, bro, don't play with me like this. Obviously, we know the Birdman thing, like, you know, and there's been other instances too. So it's, like you said, it's kind of like it all benefits. It's almost like they go into the guys like all press is good press. You know what I'm saying? Like whatever happens, it's all going
to
be good.
But that's the thing for them. It does. And we have to understand that right now in how media is being driven, it is personality driven. And before, the artist was the person that people would tune into and were tuning into listening to. And now that's not the case.
Yeah.
They're literally
the controversy.
Yes. They're tuning in to see what Charlamagne is going to do. What shock factor is going to happen. It is what drove Howard Stern for a very long time. It is what drove Starr for a very long time. And
what drives Joe Rogan now.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's gonna come next? Are we gonna get that clip that's gonna circulate 5-6 million times?
Yeah. So again, I'm not mad at Megan for not going. Again, and her, I guess Rock Nation is the management. I'm not mad at them for, you know, declining that request. Like I said, especially because like Inga said, they was like, we're not gonna talk about Tory. And so basically Charmaine, like, they tipped their hand, like, no, well, if you ain't going to talk about Tory, then we can't, because he was going to come up, she was going to come up there, and he was going to start digging in, and you know, that it would have been. You know,
and what would have happened is, because this happened with Ebro, he would have been like, I can't talk about it, and he would have been like, well, can you tell us, blah blah blah, and she would be like, I can't talk about it. Well, can you tell us, blah blah blah, I can't talk about it. Well, how did you feel about the lie? You know what I mean? It would have still been all
it's like digging. Do you want to mention these the Twitter updates, because Fleek and
I have not. It's Fleet, which is still a stupid name.
It's Fleet with a T.
Yeah, like
I thought it was Fleek with a K. Oh wait, no, it's Fleek. Oh yeah, Fleet. Because everybody talk about the.
This is one of this is bad. this old nigga moment has been brought to you by Jeff Sledge.
But Fleet is a horrible name. Like, I know there's somebody gay at Twitter.
I haven't updated my shit. How do you update?
I haven't either. You have to go into your settings. I don't have my updates. I haven't seen it. But basically, Twitter has rolled out their version of stories. I'm curious to see how it works, though, because people don't really take to live Twitter content the way they do on Instagram. So, you know, Twitter has a Periscope function that was already kind of like going live on Instagram, which some people still do, but not really. And they created the audio tweet function a few months ago, which people don't really use. The most I've seen it used was when there was a Clubhouse challenge a few weeks ago where people were like talking like people would be talking on Clubhouse. And now they rolled out a stories feature. So basically, if you've updated your Twitter app, you see fleets. I don't know who thought that name made sense. Like,
oh, that's what it looked like?
Like, why would it not be flights? I don't understand why it wasn't flights.
It's
So you see
fleets. Why wasn't it chirps or like something that had to do with a bird?
Yeah, like that's what I said. It could have been flights. It could have been so, I don't know, something. Fleets is stupid. So
you're right. Yeah, chirps would have been much better.
But anyway, so you have those now, and they're working on a drop-in audio function, but it'll take a while before it comes.
Yeah, which is basically Clubhouse.
Which is basically Clubhouse.
They're basically just it's kind of like a Snapchatting thing too, right? Is that
it's more curated than Clubhouse. I don't know about the Snapchatting.
There's no filters.
People seem to be. I mean, this is what tech companies do. I was very shocked at people like sort of making this seem like this was some wild infringement on. I'm like, it's tech. Like, it's. I mean, what are we talking about?
Instagram rolled out it. You might be thinking about Instagram, Jeff. Instagram rolled out a new feature, Reels, that's like Snapchat.
Oh, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like Russ said, like
Reels is like TikTok.
Whatever. It's like something else. Whatever.
Yeah. That old nigga moment was brought to you.
All the old niggas in this conversation.
It's one of them things my grandbaby showed me to one day. Oh, listen. Go ahead.
I got the update. I think I got it right away. I got the update. It's cute. I feel like everybody on my timeline was fleeting to complain about fleeting. But I mean, it's cute. It's like
myself on stories. I don't see myself maintaining video on two platforms. I don't see that happening.
So yeah, I mean, I have to
true.
Like Bruce said,
I log into Instagram like maybe once a day for 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm off that.
Really,
I'm on Twitter. Mostly, like, and even that's waning. Like, my area right now is TikTok. Like, really? I found a cute little humor of TikTok that's, like, you know, stay-at-home moms and, like, how to decorate your house for Christmas and what to do at Dollar Tree, like, what cleaners work. Like, there's a corner for everybody on TikTok.
Yeah.
And that's where I spend most of my, like, social media time. It's not a bunch of news. You know, you have to really search for negative content. It's literally anything you want to see. And this is a lot like, you know, I can opt in or out of this. I can look at your fleets and not have to read the timeline.
Yeah.
I mean, it works for my attention span.
I still do Twitter, but I find myself just a lot more. I'm on YouTube a lot, just a lot. Just
YouTube
looking at shit, searching shit. I know it's not a social media platform, but just still, like, I've just tested where I'm at. I spend a lot of time for music there, and I'm just like, I'm on YouTube like for hours sometimes. Just so I can, because you know, you could go down a deep dark hole on YouTube. You can just kind of just keep looking for things, and just kind of go deep.
There's so much I learn from YouTube.
Yes, I'm saying you can really learn shit from
university
YouTube.
To figure out your hair and refinishing furniture. Project going in the garage right now, like.
Yeah, so I'm saying literally anything. Twitter, it's like, yo, how do you fix my TV? Go to YouTube, and then be a motherfucker there, step by step, take you through how to put your whole flat screen together. You know what I'm saying?
You know what's interesting though? I still prefer written instructions to video. I can't explain it. There's something about like when I have to watch. I don't have the patience to watch you do it. I want you to give me the instructions and let me do it. That's the only way I can explain it. I could never get through a whole video tutorial written. Yeah, I need it written.
Yeah, I'm actually the other way. I throw instructions in the trash because I'm like, if I need some shit, I'll just go to YouTube.
Well, if I have it physically in front of me, I'm going to try to do it. But like, let's say it's trying to figure out how to like create something, hack something, you know, like that. I don't want to watch it. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me what to do so that if I have to go back, I don't have to like rewind, pause. I just find it inconvenient, whereas I can just look at
What I'll do is I'll like do it and then like he'll be like, okay, now hit control dot C or whatever. And I'll do that, but then I'll pause the video and then I'll do it and then pause the video.
Yeah,
I find that extremely annoying.
Yeah, so
I can't explain it, but yeah,
I'll watch the whole thing once and then try to do it myself.
Okay, usually. Okay,
and then
I guess we should say peace to Lil Wayne, who caught a gun charge.
He'll be all right.
Maybe he'll get pardoned. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Let's see if his man caught get him out of this jam. Before we wind it down, we got Versus tomorrow night. Gucci and Jeezy.
Which one of my friends is arguing with me about the tweets. The tweets are flying.
Gucci, I've only met him once or twice. He was actually a nice guy when I met him. But that Gucci is a flagrant nigga. Like, he doesn't give a fuck.
And one of my friends is arguing with me. He's like, somebody going to die tomorrow. But my thing is, Tim and Swizz told me that the one prevailing rule they have over everything is that there can be absolutely no active beef in Versus. A, because they realize that it's not a good viewer experience after the Sean Garrett.
After the Sean Dream thing.
Dream shit, right? But B, because they want Versus to be positive and they want it to be a celebration. They don't want it to be, they don't want it to turn into something else. And Gucci also has like real money on the line now, you know, and real shit on the line now. So I'm going to assume that the guys talked to both of them, came to an understanding, you know, y'all gonna big each other up. Cause that's part of what they make them agree to do at this point. Like, y'all gotta show each other love. Y'all gotta big each other up. Y'all gotta give each other support. And maybe they're going to at least publicly, if not really, squash shit.
I can't imagine Gucci doing that. Now I hope so.
They're gonna be in the same space.
I know. I hope so. I hope I'm wrong. I really want to be wrong. I'm saying I don't think it's gonna be like no violence stuff like that. But I can't imagine Gucci being like, "Yo, bro, I'm sorry about killing your friend."
Well, no, not that. But like, it might be like, "Yo, you know, respect, nigga. You did such and such in Atlanta. I did such and such." But post incarceration, Gucci is also like a different kind of dude. I don't know. We'll see.
Kind of, but not really. You know what I'm saying? Like, kind of, like, yeah, I mean, he's got a life now. He's got a baby on the way. He's definitely, like, in a different space than he was pre. But
he's got a Gucci campaign. He's got an actual Gucci campaign.
Yeah, no, he's doing great.
He's a baby on the way?
Yeah.
Keisha's pregnant.
I hope I'm wrong. And again, I don't think they're going to, like, fight on screen, but I just, you know, I mean, again, like, for those who don't know, they did a record way back called So Icy, which was a huge record in Atlanta and the kind of the Southeast. And then they started having beef.
But there were some problems with the So Icy mix. Yeah. That's where it started, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Jacob York would know all this because he actually managed Gucci at the time. And then the beef turned into some street beef. It turned real. Allegedly, either Jeezy or somebody from Jeezy's camp sent some cats to Gucci's crib to do bodily harm to him, and Gucci shot and killed one of those guys who was a close friend of Jeezy. Gucci got off on that because it was self-defense and has said in several records and whatever that, like, yeah, like, I killed your boy, fuck you. You know what I'm saying? So, and never has apologized for it, and I don't think he ever will because it was self-defense. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. This is like having Jay-Z and Nas in the same room at the height of their shit. Like, it's like really.
Well, that's the thing. I think that these guys are in very different places in their lives at this point, and I don't think it's going to be an apology, like you said. I think that they're at this point gonna. I mean, look, nigga, Jeezy's got a fucking beret on his
word. I was like, nigga, what are we doing?
He's doing photo shoots with Jenny Ma. You know, like Gucci is traveling the world.
Dancing in the grocery store.
Nigga taking pictures in Amsterdam with a shirt. You know, like,
yeah. So Jeezy dancing in the grocery store out Malibu. Like, nigga, what are we doing?
They honestly, they're actually in the place that they, that all that fighting for, they wanted to be in, right? Like, this was what you fought for.
This is where they wanted to be in.
And the one thing Gucci absolutely does not want to do is go back to fucking jail.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, hopefully, you know, it'll be, I mean, it's not my bag. It's not really my music. I mean, I'm probably going to watch. I'm not going to really know none of that shit.
You know, but
this is a firm R&B house. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, turn all that hippie hop noise off in here.
Yeah, I mean, I might.
This is how I know I'm old.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to know that shit.
You know a couple Jeezy records.
I'm saying I might know it, but I ain't going to know it. No, like, I ain't going to be busting out like, second verse. I'm going to know, Lemonade.
I'm going to know Lemonade, like, that's it.
No, you know, I think you
I'll
love
it. I'll put on for my city or something like that, nigga, and then I'm out.
I'm going to know, like, I'm going to know a few more Jeezy songs, but I know, like, two Gucci songs, that's it.
Then I'm going to go play the best of the OJs. compilation. You know what I'm saying? Gambling Off compilation.
Yeah, Gambling Off compilation. The Essentials, Philly.
But then we have T.I. and Wayne.
But that, apparently that's not real.
Yeah,
Tim's manager, Gary, he hit me. He was like, that's not real. And maybe it's not real yet. You know, but it's as of now, it's not real.
If it's not real, it's probably on the way. I was about to say, I don't trust.
Well, maybe now with Wayne catches gun charge, I guess that's probably dead. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. That nigga,
they might have
probably like, nigga, I'm on papers. Leave me out, that motherfucker. Like,
and they also might have just said, because of his affiliation now with 45, that they might have just been like, nah, we're good.
We can't fuck with you. Yeah, we can't fuck with you.
I wonder what state the gun charge was.
Florida.
But it's a federal. But I believe it's a federal charge.
It's a federal charge
because it was on an aircraft. He's admitting to his lawyer admits to having the gun. I mean, they couldn't really shake that.
Yeah.
It was. He's trying to paint it as though it's some sort of art piece. He keeps saying it's a gold plated gun, almost like
does
it's
it
a
shoot
toy.
Bullets, nigga?
Yeah, like nigga, is it a real gun? And basically, someone they got a tip. They got actually the plane was searched based on a tip. Which, if I had to bet money, was probably the people who was running that private jet. They probably said, enough of this shit. I'm about sick of you niggas in here. Smoking this reefer.
Yep.
And showing your ass. We're going to get this check cleared.
Reefer cigarette.
And then we're going to call.
These cough syrup stains on my seats.
Yeah.
Then we're going to call the boys.
Exactly.
After we get this payment.
Exactly. After the shit.
Hey, man, we losing recipes, man. What happened to, like, the backpack kid that would travel with the entourage?
The hell is the shit?
And hold all your shit for you.
I think the private jets. I think the private jets lull a lot of these niggas into a false sense of security that you can do whatever, whenever. It's all good. Mm. Ain't nobody gonna say shit. And like you said, I think in some cases, it does happen if the group, whoever the group is, sports, you know, whatever it is, if they are respectable. I think if they do come on a plane, they're respectable. Like you said, they ain't tearing up shit. They ain't fucking burning the carpets. And they ain't, you know, some people might look, you know, they probably tip the stewardess, da da da. People probably kind of look the other way. But if you end up being flagrant, the flagrant shit ain't going to last long, you know, or if you just kind of just ODN, if you like coming back with like Juice WRLD and them have like wild drugs, it's like, bro, like, come on, man, like, you're not even trying to fake the funk here. You're carrying, we're basically a cartel right now, you know?
It's just fascinating to me the way that wealth works, because I'm making sure I got the right ounces of toothpaste before I get on a plane.
Well, you know, we know you always with your plane socks. Weed. With your plane socks and all that for the airport.
No, me.
excuse me. Inka, do you want to mention Put a Ring on It? Did you watch this week? Or did you not watch?
I did not. I forgot. I don't know where my head was.
Yeah, I watched.
I don't watch any TV.
What'd you think, bro?
I told you Michael and that gal need to cut the shit.
Yeah,
they need to like they need to cut the shit.
Yeah.
Yo,
wait,
when
which
he
one
said,
is Michael? Are they the new one?
So Michael is
the one with the young
Michael
girl.
Is the dark skin. Michael is the dark skin, tall fella.
Right. Yeah,
and he's a little older. I think he's like 35.
Yeah, he's 35. Yeah.
And she's like 27 or something
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
And basically, he was throwing out like you know, I guess his son comes to live with him during the summer, and his son is like 12, so he's going to be like kind of going to high school soon. And he was basically kind of throwing out the idea that, hey, I think I might want him to, you know, basically come live with me
full time,
you know, mm-hmm. to kind of go through that, almost like fucking Boys in the Hood, right? Like,
yeah, like Trey.
Yeah, yeah. So you go live with your daddy, right? And so she was basically like, yeah, nigga, I don't really know about that.
Yeah, nah.
I was blown away. She basically looked at dude like, yo, she said, yeah, you know, when he's here, it's like we got a third person at dinner, and I kind of, you know, we kind of have to make these adjustments. And I'm, because I didn't know he had a son, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't, you know, it's not like sort of blatant, right, in the beginning. And so I'm saying to myself, like, okay, nigga, you've been down 2 years and he has a kid. Like, it never dawned on you that the possibility of him having his son live with him was even in, like, God forbid, what if the mom dies? Like, what do you think happens to a kid? I was I was fascinated that she was so staunch and so hard, like, yo, I'm not that's with, a deal breaker.
She basically was like, when your son
what
is
do
here,
people think marriage is.
She was basically yo, when your son is here, he's kind of in the way.
Yes.
Like, he's kind of in the way. We can't, like, when your son's here, we can't do shit. We can't go out.
But
she's on the other side saying, yeah, I want to have kids. So basically it's kind of be like, oh, if we have kids, your son's not going to be part of this. It's crazy, bro.
Here's what I surmise from that relationship. Michael really likes her, and she knows that. Mm-hmm. And so the ghosting part was her trying to just kind of go, you know, like I said before, you know, she wanted to date probably a little bit and see what else was out there. And she looked up and he's a 35-year-old. He's gainfully employed. He, you know, like he checks a lot of boxes,
mm-hmm.
you know, good looking dude. So, yeah. So I think she wanted to have this fantasy of, you know, living in a big city, we have this beautiful condo, we drink tea on the balcony and all that shit. And guess what, man? Like, your teenage son coming in here with the fucking stink sneakers and me driving the
PlayStation
the
loud
practice and all that shit. Like, I ain't doing that shit, bro.
Yeah.
And that was just, I was fascinated because his son is 12.
Yeah, exactly.
You think your son doesn't feel that energy, though? Like, what kind of shit do you have to be to, like, just blatantly not want him around like that? And then to say it on TV, like, the kid's not going to see this?
Yes. I didn't understand. I'm going to tell you something. I don't think she wants to be in that relationship.
Me either.
I think she doesn't have the courage after coming back to him. She doesn't really have the courage to say that. Because it really, like, she knows what she did. She broke out, she ghosted him, then she came back and everything was good. And now she's kind of looking at this like, I was probably right. I don't really want to do this shit. But he hasn't given her a reason to, right? Yeah, like, he doesn't give her a reason to. And I think he senses that, which is why he's like, yeah, I think I might want to try this other date again.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is like, again, and I know it's television, so maybe, you know, that's why. But like, if I'm with somebody and they say like, nah, I'm not really fucking with your son coming to live with you, then our relationship's over,
nigga.
On the spot, really. Like, there's no talking after that. We're done.
Cut that camera off. You get the fuck out.
That's what I'm saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Any kind of weird vibe around my kids,
it's over.
I don't even have to say anything flagrant
be there. The fact that you thought you could say that to me.
Exactly. And I was going to eat it and be like, well, yeah, let me think about it. Are you fucking crazy?
This is a gots to go, nigga.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah, it's over. It's over.
Immediately.
Because not only is that flagrant, but like you've now showed me I can't trust you with my kid at all.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck you're going to do when I got to run out and it's just y'all.
Oh, yeah. I could tell you what she's going to do. She going to be eating lobster and lobster Alfredo. And she's going to give that little nigga fish sticks and french fries. That's what's going to happen.
O'Rider fries.
Yeah, she ain't paid for the trip. He can't go on the trip. He has
chill out. O'Rider fries.
He ain't got no money for the book fair. She ain't leave no $10 out for him.
Yep. He missed the school bus. It's like, all right, well, I guess he got to walk. You know what I'm saying? Just flagrant shit, bro. That shit was crazy. Yeah, so. Yeah, but that's it. Y'all got anything else?
I can't believe next week is Thanksgiving. Oh, my God.
Have y'all decided
what y'all doing? All year.
I know, but, like, I was at the grocery store. I was at the grocery store the day before yesterday, and I was looking at all the Thanksgiving stuff, and I was like, because I'm staying at home. I'm going to cook for myself, though. But I was like, oh, I can shop for Thanksgiving next week. And then I was like, shit, Thanksgiving is next
week. Is next week.
But
you know how these supermarkets get up here in this neighborhood. They get rammed.
I ordered a honey baked ham. I decided I don't feel like cooking a protein. But I'm going to do
dressing. That's some old black shit right there. Got me some of this ham.
They go have the close. Go have the pineapples on there with the toothpicks.
Y'all know I made a ham the weekend that we went in the shutdown. Like I actually made a ham.
Yeah, I remember you telling
us. So, that is $75 I am willing to spend.
Does that ham cost that much?
Yeah. It's worth it though, especially with the shipping. It's worth it. So I ordered my ham. My ham comes on Saturday. Since I leave next Monday, I'm gonna start eating early. I'm gonna make.
Are you going? You going down South Carolina?
On Monday the 30th. Yeah, because okay. I haven't seen mom since last Thanksgiving. Like,
oh wow,
crazy.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's a long time. Yeah.
So but I'm gonna go. I'm gonna stay in a hotel. I'm gonna take a test before I leave. I'm gonna take a test when I get there and stay in a hotel for a couple of days while I wait for the results to come back.
Bro, what y'all doing?
I'm cooking here, but I'm cooking like on Tuesday so I can eat.
We're gonna be light this year.
Yeah.
This will be my first. My sister, Dee Dee, is she works in hospital, so she can't come. You know what I'm saying? Like she just can't be exposed.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
So this will be my first Thanksgiving like ever without at least one of my sisters around. So we're gonna be light this year. We'll have a couple. My mother-in-law is here.
Mm.
She's high risk. She's, you know, she's 87 years old.
Older,
so, yeah, so we're going to keep it real, real tight, close-knit family. My in-laws will come by. So it'll probably be about 10 of us, which is really like not even a third of what we would normally have. We usually have
any. Yeah, y'all have a house. Y'all be having a house, yeah.
Yeah, we usually have between 30 and 35 people at the house. So none of that shit's happening. And that's a really good thing because honestly – you know, I love my family, but, you know, that shit is exhausting.
Yeah, that should be wearing you out every year.
You know, every year, you know, I got to, you know, we tent out our deck. We put a tent on the deck. So we have the furniture out there. The living room becomes a dining room. You know, like, I just want to, you know, I want to get up on Friday, man, and just come down and make me a turkey sandwich. And I don't want to have to
watch a game.
Like, you know, and I was expressing like, yo, like, I'm 20 years in on this shit. Like,
and
I'm
you
good.
Always have extra
yeah, exactly.
I'm good.
You also always 20 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Always, always. And so that's why what we're doing is we're just going to really limit this, right? Because we know that some of the invites, you know, it's not going to be one person. You know, that one person turns into four quickly.
Of course.
And so we just don't even want to do that, you know, for obvious health reasons. And also, you know, it's almost like a bit of a reset for us. Like, I got to be honest, man, you know, starting the Thanksgiving process on Tuesday and,
it's a lot.
You know, not finishing until fucking dinner is served. It's you know, that shit takes its toll.
Exhausting. What y'all doing, Nika?
I'm cooking at home on Thursday. Okay. We're trying to narrow it down to see exactly what we want. It's still going to be like 15 things I gotta make, but
you be making a lot of food. Even when I couldn't eat it, you was making a lot of food.
I know. She still ain't gonna eat none of this Thanksgiving stuff, but I'm gonna make, I don't know. I got a tiny little ham at Trav once fried turkey wings, so
hey man, I ain't mad at the fried turkey wings though.
But this Sunday I am gonna go down to my mom's just for like 2 days. We've had a lot of loss in our family lately, so she's gonna do to-go plates for everybody to kind of drive by and hand them out.
Oh,
so
that's nice.
That's really nice.
With that,
that's nice. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, just so we feel like a little bit of, you know, but the actual holiday, like, no, I'm not gonna be anywhere but home.
Yeah, I might go up to see Julian on Thanksgiving Day. Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out now. He wants me to come to your side, Mike. But again, it's, you know, that being on the Metro North and da-da-da. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm a little antsy about that. So I might. But besides that, I'm going to be kind of chilling, you know? My opinion is not comfortable doing it. Not, you know, and I'm good with that. Like, it's fine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not tripping. It's like, cool, you know? Yeah. You know? So I guess there'll be a lot of Zoom calls on Thanksgiving, you know, talking to people that way. And watching some Netflix.
Yeah, I got to find out. I got to show my mom how to Zoom finally.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we're going to wrap it up on that. We'll talk to y'all. I guess we'll figure out if we're going to do a show next week or not. Yeah, I don't know.
It might be worth it to talk about Fresh Prince. I don't know. Maybe
yeah, the Fresh Prince thing and the verses. But we'll figure it out.
If we can join next in the week. Kitchen.
Yeah, either way, y'all be safe out there. Keep wearing your mask.
Please.
Just keep wearing your mask. Keep wearing your mask.
And also, just like...
Just chill out.
Don't do the big family Thanksgiving.
Yeah, don't do the big family thing. I know we all miss our families. We all miss, yeah. You know, the usual Thanksgiving festivities. We all do. Yes, it'll be... You know, it'll be, you know, sad that we can't do it this year, but I'd rather not do it this year and everybody be... Exactly. So I'd rather not do it this year. And
let me just say this. A lot of you niggas trying to knock off Big Mama anyway, because you've been trying to get the deed to that house.
And that insurance policy.
Get that insurance policy that's under her bed in that little metal box.
In that metal box.
With the little key for the lock.
With the 1, 2, 3 combination. That's still 1, 2, 3.
The one that's got her Saturday night special in it.
Exactly. And she still got her taxes from 1963. I don't know. They might call me. They call you by the
way. She got everybody in the family social security taxes, number is on the index card.
Throw them shits away. I don't throw nothing away. I don't trust these people. So we'll see y'all next week. Y'all be safe out there.
Later. Peace.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.